Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Lion and the Unicorn: Socialism and the English Genius is George Orwell's compact, influential wartime essay arguing that Britain could only defeat fascism by transforming itself. Written during World War II, it blends political analysis with cultural observation, treating national character not as a sentimental myth but as a practical force that shapes what reforms are possible. Orwell challenges comfortable patriotism and equally challenges abstract revolutionary talk, insisting that a credible program must speak to ordinary English habits, class realities, and the emotional pull of home, showing how he could defend national traditions while demanding structural change. Along the way, he dissects propaganda, class privilege, and the failures of pre-war leadership, and he proposes a vision of patriotic socialism grounded in fairness, competence, and shared sacrifice. It remains a vivid snapshot of a society under existential pressure and a case study in political writing that aims to persuade rather than posture. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, war is a catalyst for social transformation. A central argument of the essay is that total war exposes a nation's true power structure and forces choices that peacetime politics can postpone. Orwell treats the conflict not only as a military contest, but as a test of legitimacy. If a society asks for maximum sacrifice, people will eventually question why rewards and security remain unequally distributed. He contends that Britain could not fight effectively while clinging to entrenched privilege, outdated leadership habits, and economic arrangements that left large groups insecure. The claim is not that hardship automatically produces progress, but that wartime mobilization makes contradictions visible and creates an opening for sweeping reforms. He stresses the practical side of this insight: morale, productivity, and unity depend on whether citizens believe the burden is fairly shared. In this frame, socialism is not presented as a utopian luxury, but as a strategy for national survival, because rational planning, broader welfare, and reduced class resentment can strengthen collective capacity. The topic also highlights Orwell's impatience with purely rhetorical patriotism. He urges a version of loyalty that demands competence and justice, arguing that genuine national defense requires changing what the nation is defending. Secondly, the English character and the limits of ideology. Orwell builds much of his persuasion around the idea that political programs succeed only when they fit a country's cultural instincts. He explores what he calls the English genius: everyday decency, privacy, skepticism toward grand theory, and a preference for gradual adaptation over doctrinal purity. Rather than flattering these traits, he uses them as constraints and opportunities. On one hand, they make certain forms of authoritarian discipline less likely to take root on the other. They can encourage complacency and denial when crisis requires candid change. Orwell criticizes ideologues who import slogans and expect the public to reorganize itself around them, arguing that an effective movement must speak in familiar moral language and respect local habits. This emphasis anticipates later debates about national identity and reform, showing how cultural attachments can be mobilized without collapsing into chauvinism. His analysis also implies that appeals to class alone may fail if they ignore the emotional reality of belonging, landscape, and ordinary customs. The strength of this topic is its realism. Orwell is not claiming that culture is destiny, but that persuasion must start from how people actually live and what they already value, especially under pressure. Thirdly, class privilege and the credibility problem of leadership. Another major strand is Orwell's critique of the British class system and the way it distorts leadership selection. He argues that pre-war and early wartime Britain suffered from a mismatch between responsibility and competence, with elite networks preserving status even when performance failed. This is not merely a moral complaint, it is a strategic one. When decisions are made by insulated groups, policy becomes timid, misinformed, or self-protecting, and the wider public loses trust. Orwell examines how class markers, schooling, and social codes can create an unofficial barrier to talent, preventing capable people from rising and encouraging deference rather than accountability. He links this to national vulnerability. A society that values appearances and tradition over merit may struggle to adapt in a fast-moving conflict. At the same time, he does not portray the working class as automatically virtuous or unified. Instead, he emphasizes incentives and structures, suggesting that fairness in pay, taxation, and opportunity is necessary to align personal interest with national effort. The topic underscores his belief that political legitimacy comes from shared risk and shared benefit. If the poor are asked to endure danger and austerity while the privileged remain cushioned, solidarity becomes fragile and the war effort becomes morally and practically compromised. Fourthly, patriotic socialism as a democratic alternative to fascism. Orwell insists that opposition to fascism must be more than a negative stance, it must offer a positive. democratic future worth fighting for. He frames patriotic socialism as that alternative, combining love of country with a plan to widen economic security and political participation. The key move is to detach patriotism from empire nostalgia or upper-class ritual and reconnect it to common life and shared institutions. In this vision, the nation is not a blood myth but a community of responsibility, and reform is a way of making that community real. Orwell also distances his proposal from authoritarian socialism, warning that centralized power without democratic safeguards can replicate the coercion it claims to defeat. He argues for reforms that ordinary people can recognize as just a stronger safety net, more equitable taxation, and planning aimed at meeting real needs rather than protecting rent-seeking interests. The wartime context matters, because it heightens the urgency of choosing between democratic renewal and reactionary control. Orwell's approach shows how a left politics can speak in a national register without surrendering to xenophobia. The topic is valuable today because it models how to integrate cultural belonging, democratic norms, and economic reform into a single persuasive story rather than treating them as competing loyalties. Lastly, propaganda, plain speech, and the ethics of political persuasion. The essay also functions as a lesson in political communication. Orwell is acutely aware that modern politics relies on narrative, symbols, and emotional cues, and he challenges writers and activists to speak plainly about power while avoiding manipulative fantasy. He criticizes comforting myths that conceal inequality, and equally criticizes fashionable radical posturing that confuses cleverness with strategy. For Orwell, the ethical problem is not whether persuasion uses feeling, because it must, but whether it respects reality and the audience. He tries to persuade by combining concrete observation with moral argument, pushing readers to see the connection between daily life and high politics. This includes confronting the language of national unity when it is used to silence criticism, and confronting the language of revolution when it becomes an excuse for irresponsibility. The topic highlights his broader commitment to intellectual honesty, acknowledging complexity, admitting constraints, and still making a choice. It also shows why the essay has had a lasting influence on political writers. Its method suggests that effective persuasion is built from recognizable facts, shared moral premises, and a clear account of trade-offs, in a media environment where slogans often replace analysis. Orwell's insistence on clarity and accountability remains a practical tool for citizens who want to evaluate leaders, policies, and movements without being captured by tribal scripts. In conclusion, this book is best suited to readers who want a concise but forceful political argument rooted in lived experience, students of 20th century history, readers of Orwell's fiction who want his direct political voice, and anyone interested in how democratic societies respond to crisis. It also rewards people concerned with today's tensions between national identity and progressive reform, because Orwell demonstrates a way to hold both without drifting into either cynical technocracy or empty romanticism. The benefit is not a checklist of policies, but a sharper lens for judging credibility, fairness, and leadership. Orwell links morale and social cohesion to the everyday perception of justice, helping readers see why inequality is not only a private hardship but a public risk. Compared with many political essays that lean heavily on theory or partisan talking points, this one stands out for its balance of cultural insight, urgency, and plain language. It is worth buying because it offers a historically grounded model of democratic socialist reasoning that is neither authoritarian nor vague. Its arguments are compact enough to revisit, yet rich enough to spark debate about class, propaganda, and the responsibilities of citizenship. Readers come away with a clearer sense of how societies change under pressure and what honest persuasion can look like. If you would like to support George Orwell, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.